大家好，我是峰哥何峰。这次呢，我想跟大家分享一个，就是我很喜欢的一位算投资人吧，这硅谷的投资人叫 Paul Graham。他呢，经常写一些文章，有些文章呢是我会不定期的反复阅读的。这次跟大家分享的呢，这篇文章就叫做 "Do Things That Don't Scale"。是 Paul Graham 在2013年7月份写的一篇文章，我就在这里把这篇文章跟大家读一读。 One of the most common types of advice we give at Y Combinator is to do things that don't scale. A lot of would-be founders believe that startups either take off or don't. You build something, make it available, and if you've made a better mousetrap, people beat a path to your door as promised. Or they don't.In which case, the market must not exist. Actually, startups take off because the founders make them take off. There may be a handful that just grew by themselves, but usually it takes some sort of push to get them going. A good metaphor would be the cranks that car engines had before they got electric starters. Once the engine was going, it would keep going, but there was a separate and laborious process to get it going. Recruit.The most common unscalable thing founders have to do at the start is to recruit users manually. Nearly all startups have to. You can't wait for users to come to you. You have to go out and get them. Stripe is one of the most successful startups we've funded, and the problem they solved was an urgent one. If anyone could have sat back and waited for users, it was Stripe.But in fact, they're famous within YC for aggressively early user acquisition. Startups building things for other startups have a big pool of potential users in the other companies we've funded, and none took better advantage of it than Stripe. At YC, we use the term collision installation for the technique they invented. More diffident founders ask, will you try our beta?And if the answer is yes, they say, great, we'll send you a link. But the Collision brothers weren't going to wait. When anyone agreed to try Stripe, they say, right then, give me your laptop and set them up on the spot. There are two reasons founders resist going out and recruiting users individually. One is a combination of shyness and laziness. They'd rather sit at home,writing code then go out and talk to a bunch of strangers and probably be rejected by most of them. But for a startup to succeed, at least one founder, usually the CEO, will have to spend a lot of time on sales and marketing. The other reason founders ignored this path is that the absolute numbers seemed so small at first. This can't be how the big, famous startups got started, they think. The mistake they make is to underestimate the power of compound growth.We encourage every startup to measure their progress by weekly growth rate. If you have 100 users, you need to get 10 more next week to grow 10% a week. And while 110 may not seem much better than 100, if you keep growing at 10% a week, you'll be surprised how big the numbers get. After a year, you'll have 14,000 users, and after 2 years, you'll have 2 million. You'll be doing different things when you are acquiring users 1,000 at a time, and growth has to slow down eventually. But if the market exists, you can usually start by recruiting users manually and then gradually switch to less manual methods. Airbnb is a classic example of this technique. Marketplaces are so hard to get rolling that you should expect to take heroic measures at first. In Airbnb's case, this consists of going door to door in New York,recruit new users and helping existing ones improve their listings. When I remember the Airbnbs during YC, I pictured them with rolly bags, because when they showed up for Tuesday dinners, they'd always just flown back from somewhere. Fragile. Airbnb now seems like an unstoppable juggernaut.But early on, it was so fragile that about 30 days of going out and engaging in person with users made the difference between success and failure. That initial fragility was not a unique feature of Airbnb. Almost all startups are fragile initially, and that's one of the biggest things inexperienced founders and investors and reporters that know it all on forums get wrong about them. They unconsciously judge level startups by the standards of established ones. They're like someone looking at a newborn baby and concluding, there's no way this tiny creature could ever accomplish anything. It's harmless if reporters and know-it-alls dismiss your startup. They're always getting things wrong. It's even okay if investors dismiss your startup. They'll change their minds when they see growth. The big danger is that you dismiss your startup yourself. I've seen it happen. I often have to encourage founders who don't see the full potential of what they're building. Even Bill Gates made that mistake. He returned to Harvard for the fall semester after starting Microsoft. He didn't stay long, but he wouldn't have returned at all if he'd realized Microsoft was going to be even a fraction of the size it turned out to be. The question to ask about an early stage startup is not, is this company taking over the world? But how big could this company get if the founders did the right things? And the right things often seem both laborious and inconsequential at the time. Microsoft can't have seemed very impressive when it was just a couple guys in Albuquerque, where's that, writing basic interpreters for a market of a few thousand hobbyists, as they were then called. But in retrospect, that was the optimal path to dominating microcomputer software. And I know Brian Chesky and Joe Gabbia didn't feel like they were en route to the big time as they were taking professional photos of their first host's apartments. They were just trying to survive. But in retrospect, that too was the optimal path to dominating a big market. How do you find users to recruit manually? If you build something to solve your own problems, then you only have to find your own peers, which is usually straightforward. Otherwise, you'll have to make a more deliberate effort to locate the most promising vein of users. The usual way to do that is to get some initial set of users by doing a comparatively untargeted launch, and then to observe which kind seem most enthusiastic and seek out more like them. For example, Bill Silberman noticed that a lot of the earliest Pinterest users were interested in design, so he went to a conference of design bloggers to recruit users, and that worked out well. Delight. You should take extraordinary measures, not just to acquire users, but also to make them happy. For as long as they could, which turned out to be surprisingly long, Wufoo sent each new user a handwritten thank you note. Your first users should feel that signing up with you was one of the best choices they've ever made, and you in turn should be racking your brains to think of new ways to delight them. Why do we have to teach startups this? Why is it counterintuitive for founders? Three reasons, I think. One is that a lot of startup founders are trained as engineers, and customer service is not part of the training of engineers. You're supposed to build things that are robust and elegant, not be slavishly attentive to individual users like some kind of salesperson. Ironically, part of the reason engineering is traditionally averse to handholding is that its traditions date from a time when engineers were less powerful, when they were only in charge of their narrow domain of building things rather than running the whole show. You can be ornery when you're Scotty, but not when you're Kirk. Another reason founders don't focus enough on individual customers is that they worry it won't scale. When founders of larval startups worry about this, I point out that in their current state, they have nothing to lose. Maybe if they go out of their way to make existing users super happy, they'll one day have too many to do so much for. That would be a great problem to have. See if you can make it happen. And incidentally, when it does, you'll find that delight customers scales better than you expected. Partly because you can usually find ways to make anything scale more than you would have predicted, and partly because delighting users will by then have permeated your culture. I have never once seen a startup lured down a blind alley by trying too hard to make their initial users happy. But perhaps the biggest thing preventing founders from realizing how attentive they could be to their users is that they've never experienced such attention themselves. Their standards for customer service have been set by the companies they've been customers of, which are mostly big ones. Tim Cook doesn't send you a handwritten note after you buy a laptop. He can't. But you can. That one advantage of being small, you can provide a level of service no big company can. Once you realize that the existing conventions are not the upper bound on user experience, it's interesting in a very pleasant way to think about how far you could go to delight your users.